Okay, hey folks, thanks for tuning in again and welcome back to the Vigilance Press Podcast. I'm your usual host, well, your unusual host, your regular host, Aletta Granola, Mike Lafferty. And with me tonight, I've got one of our usual guests, James Dossie of Shadow Chaser Studios. How you doing, James?
Hey, pretty good.
And James is also Shadow Chaser on the Atomic Think Tank Forum, and he is the president and brain trust behind Shadow Chaser Studios, and he's available for your art commission needs. And go ahead, James.
Needs and whatever else needs needing.
He is a great wedding singer, does a great medley of 80s tunes. If you're having a wedding or bar mitzvah, James is available.
That is a lie.
There's a great version of Roxanne by the Police. And our very special guest tonight is Mr. Leon Chang, who you might know, and I'm going to murder your forum name, forgive me, Leon, Taliesin from the Atomic Think Tank.
Taliesin.
Who has a huge repository. Hey, great to have you, man. He has a huge repository of builds. He's been building up literally for years on the Atomic Think Tank. Ever since, did you start with Second Ed or were you earlier than that?
Second Ed.
Okay. So you've been at it for how long, though?
Gosh. When did that thread start? 2005, 2006?
Oh, wow.
Somewhere in ancient history.
I was still,
2005,
I was
so that'd be about 5 years now.
I was still in high school back then, man. I'm kidding. I wish I was still in high school back then. That's incredibly untrue. But, and Leon got called up to the majors. He went from being a fan and forum participant to being a paid freelancer on a Green Ronin product, being the DCA Adventures line. And if I'm correct, Leon, you're going to have characters that you've written in Heroes and Villains Volume 1 and 2.
Just Volume 2. I didn't join the project until after Volume 1 had basically seen a draft, and they had already selected freelancers for that.
Oh, cool. Still very cool.
So jumped in midstream.
Well, hey, how'd that happen? I mean, that's kind of like every fan's dream, getting the email from, you know, John or Steve saying, hey, we like your work. Can you
That was my dream, too. I think I found out about the DCA project about the time most forum participants did. This was, several months ago, almost half a year ago. And
I think it was closer to March.
Was it March?
It was early April. In the year. Yeah. It was early.
Yeah. Yeah, and I made some commentary about how excited I was about the project, and my only regret that I wasn't part of it. And turns out, the squeaky wheel does get the grease. So John saw my comment and emailed me and asked me if I wanted to contribute to Heroes and Villains Volume 2. And
so the only question I have is, was there a big girly scream involved with your yes? Or like a squeal of delight?
Yes, it scared most of my coworkers while I was checking my email at work. And I assured them that nothing had exploded and it was only me.
Nice. That is really cool. I am right now, you probably feel a few degrees warmer because you were bathing in the scintillating rays of my envy.
Yeah, I think it was back during one of my I think ever since they announced third edition, I've been, prowling the forums daily trying to eke out any information I got. And I remember your post going, man, I'm so envious of you guys. And then it was just like a week later going, man, I wish I could talk about this. I just signed an NDA.
Yeah, that's probably the event that most changed my recent life. Gosh, that's kind of sad. But, when you're a nerd and a geek, that's what you have to settle for. Not that I'm settling. This is basically something that's jumped to the forefront, of my life, surprisingly. It's my first freelance gig, my first paid freelance gig. It's been quite an experience. There, John and Steve and all the other freelancers are a great group of people to work with.
Do you guys ever have like conference calls where y'all kind of figure out directions and strategies or that kind of stuff?
No, we do have a Yahoo groups that we kind of message board that we kind of shoot ideas off each other every now and then. And, you know, if someone has a question, you know, about some obscure character or even a mechanic, and sometimes, you know, Steve and John would solicit some feedback about how a certain rule might work or how a certain option might be implemented. So there was definitely a lot of fine tuning right in the final moments before DCA was released. So you know, I know there was some criticism on the forums that maybe, you know, DCA was released a little too early, that we didn't spend enough time on it. But at the same time, we were devoting quite a bit of time and attention to the rules and, you know, right up to the final moment.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, can you tell us how many builds you've got in Heroes and Villains 2?
I think I have about, a little under a dozen, 9 or 10, I think. And full stat blocks and write-ups. And then, you know, John, knowing how mechanically inclined, I guess, I was, asked me if I would be willing to do some additional stat blocks, you know, for some of the other freelancers who knew the characters very well, but perhaps weren't quite as familiar with the game. And so, you know, I think the division of labor kind of played to each of our strengths. You know, they certainly, you know, are all great, amazing writers who obviously show great love for their characters. And, you know, and I had an opportunity to write more stat blocks. So it was a win-win all around, I think.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Just kind of curious, what do you do when you're not writing DCA stat blocks?
So my day job or my secret identity is scientist by day.
Really?
It's not nearly as exciting as a comic book mad scientist, unfortunately. I've never blown anything or anyone up. I've never created, you know, any, you know, deadly techno-organic virus.
Was that James?
Not even at parties.
So, what kind of scientist? You in genetics? You in biology? In botany? What do you do?
Biology.
Oh, okay.
Pharmaceuticals. So I do. I'm a grunt laborer in the pharmaceutical industry. So scientist by day.
Explains your facility with math. That's for sure.
We have calculators now. You know.
I don't care what you're using as a tool. You still have to understand the basic structure of things. Not everybody's keyed into that.
I haven't had to use any math too much more complicated than algebra since college, thankfully. So.
Yeah, you know, I was looking over some calculus concepts the other day, and I was like, wow, I once knew this stuff backwards and forwards, and now it's just like Greek to me. But in my day job, I work for a defense contractor, and two people have said, wow, you're like Iron Man, aren't you? I'm like, no, not really. It's not. It's not Stark Industries I work for, but that's really cool, Leon. So what part of the country you live in?
West Coast, California. I'm a L.A. native, living in San Diego right now.
Oh, sweet. Nice. Cool, man. Cool. Okay, well, I understand that you've been given permission from Mr. Lighthouser to talk about Parasite.
Yes. He was one of the characters I worked on in Heroes and Villains.
And I'm sure he's going to be an interesting build. Before we dive into that, I will admit, and this is ruining my geek cred, but I had to Google Parasite when I heard we were going to be talking about him on the website tonight, podcast tonight. And maybe I'm not the only person who wouldn't know. I mean, once I was like, oh, okay, it's the purple guy. Okay, I know that guy. And I've seen him, you know, in the comic books and the cartoons.
For me, when I hit Wikipedia on Parasite just to kind of brush up on him the other day, I was and this was just coincidence because I didn't find out about Leon's choice until today, but it was striking to me how much different the modern Parasite story is compared to like the pre-crisis Parasite.
Right. That was
he's one of Superman's villains, right?
He's most often associated as a Superman villain. He's you know, he's on, I guess, most recently on part of Luthor's Superman Revenge Squad in the World of New Krypton. It was the storyline before that. And he's most often associated as a Superman villain. His history is rather convoluted, I'll admit. And I think that was one of the difficulties in picking which version to do for an iconic build. And, you know, I think that term has been bandied around quite a bit, you know, but when you have 75 years of history, as several of these DC Comics characters have, you really have to focus on a version that hopefully everyone can recognize, you know, that, you know, Mike can say, hey, I know him. It's that purple dude.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, well, I tell you what. Why don't you, for the sake of listeners who might be as ignorant as I was, could you just give us a brief synopsis of the character's background and then dive in and talk about the stat block?
Sure. Parasite, basically every version of Parasite got his powers by being doused in some sort of radioactive waste that made it so that he needed to feed off of the life energy of others in order to survive. And obviously, Superman is his meal of choice, so to speak, since he has more life energy and more power than almost anyone else in the DC universe. So, you know, kind of like a junkie chasing a fix, he's chased after Superman ever since. And picking the version to do, the current version, I believe, is Rudy Jones. Post-crisis, he's been the Parasite. The previous pre-crisis version of Parasite was Max Jensen, and I think the recent maxi series by Alex Ross, Justice, also used, I think, the Max Jensen version of Parasite. Their powers are pretty similar. But their origin story is quite different. Rudy Jones, I think, initially post-crisis had some really odd origin story. I think it started off with Darkseid, you know, remembering that there was a pre-crisis Parasite that always plagued Superman. And so he, you know, manipulated events to create a new Parasite, except this one was green. And, you know, it was just a really, really odd, I thought, origin. And thankfully, recently in the Superman Secret Origins by Jeff Johns, he kind of retconned the character and made it, made his origin story fit a little bit better in the world of Superman.
Okay, cool. And can you talk a little bit about his powers and how you built him and whatnot?
Sure. So when I looked at Parasite, and in 3E we were generally assigned, you know, very, very little to go off of. You know, we were given, you know, a power level range and told to, you know, have at it. And so he's a power level 13 character. So, you know, definitely not a cosmic level threat, and he never has been. But he's definitely, you know, a real heavy hitter in the DC universe. And when I looked at the power level, I thought, well, you know, that's going to have to be defined by a signature power, which is his life and his power drain. So essentially, in second edition, there were a couple of ways to build such a character. There was the transfer power. There was a mimic. And, you know, a lot of them were, I don't know if many people were familiar with a lot of the second edition versions of these powers, but they were rather difficult to build around. There were a lot of different constraints. So third edition actually made my job a lot easier. And I really actually requested Parasite because I thought of, you know, a pretty fun way to build him. So, his main power is his power drain, which is an affliction. And for those who don't know, the affliction is built up as, a power that can inflict certain conditions on the target, depending on how many degrees of success you've had, or actually how many degrees of failure on the save. So the three conditions for the affliction are for Parasite would be fatigued, exhausted, and transformed. And the first two conditions essentially kind of speak for themselves. Parasite's victims always feel, you know, as if they're weak, they're tired, they're fatigued. And it was the third level that really interested me, because transformed is, you know, quite open-ended, you know, so you can say, hey, you know, he's transformed into, you know, whatever. You can change the character's traits to suit whatever form you want it to be. And in this case, Parasite transforms his victims into a powerless version of themselves.
Interesting, interesting. I like that approach. It simplifies things a lot.
Yeah, I really like the third degree conditions in 3E. I think a lot of these conditions are, to some extent, they basically take the character out of the fight in some way. He's incapacitated. He's paralyzed.
Right.
He's transformed. You know, a lot of these all or nothing effects, I guess, drawing back from, let's say, D&D, you have death spells and harm, and they were really difficult to balance. And even in second edition, Mutants and Masterminds, you had effects like mind control, which basically, if you failed, you were screwed, essentially. And in 3E, they built it in, so you have to fail, you know, by 3 degrees in order to be affected by this third degree condition. For a damage, for the damage effect, it would be 4 degrees, but it's basically, you know, you have to fail by quite a lot to be taken out of the fight.
Okay. I had a quick question as to your approach. Now, one of the things that Jack tells us, and sorry he wasn't able to join us tonight, but Jack Norris has been a frequent guest, as our longtime listeners will know, he's also a contributing writer. But in his Catman build, he gave us a very thorough explanation of how he approaches character design. And he starts with the write-up, with the history and writing the character. And then he approaches the stats. And he does so in a very kind of systematic way, but focusing on, you know, how he perceives translating these things in the number form. What's your approach?
It's a little different in some ways. Definitely with a project like this, you know, I do have to write up, you know, a history of powers section. For, you know, most of my builds on the forums, you know, I assume that the backstory is already known. So for a lot of the characters, you know, I know about them. I've, you know, I've probably played those characters before in different role-playing games. So I have an idea of how I want them to look in an RPG, how I want them to play.
The function, yeah.
And, yes, the function. And so obviously you have to know as much as you can about the character, whether that's, you know, reading, you know, the most recent appearances. In the case of Parasite, you know, I knew that he had made a recent appearance, a recent origin story, figured out exactly how I think his power should work, and then basically built to power level in this case. Now, I usually have, you know, quite a few benchmarks that I have to conceive of, you know, from scratch. Of course, in this case, Steve has already built a lot of benchmark characters, Batman, Superman, Lex Luthor. And so that kind of cuts out, you know, the first part of character building for me. You know, in second edition, I had to come up with, you know, what I thought each character should be, you know, and of course you would stat up the iconics and say, hey, you know, Superman should have a strength of 19, or Batman should have a strength of, you know, this, and figure out where everyone else falls into place. Obviously, in this case, it's a little easier. You know, you already have some characters, about 30 characters to compare to, and to fit these characters in. So I try to start the character by looking at what's their most signature ability? What really defines this character, you know, in this case, Parasite, as Parasite? You know, what makes him power level 13? You know, he's definitely, you know, his strength doesn't really make him power level 13. His, you know, intelligence certainly doesn't. You know, it's his power drain and the powers that he acquires. And so the other part of his power, you know, would be his mimicry. You know, it's a variable pool that allows him to duplicate the traits of his subjects and their appearances. And it's also limited by the fact that it's limited by the fact that he's also duplicates his subjects' weaknesses as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that
mm-hmm.
could be a quirk, you know, and you could, you know, possibly throw that in as a complication as well. So there's definitely a little leeway there in how you want to build that in third edition.
Yeah, that kind of throws a new light. I'd seen you and several of the other, I don't know, I guess I call you guys the intelligentsia, but the really analytical participants on the Atomic Think Tank forums.
Analytical participants, yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys really are, you know, steeped in the lore of the rules so much that you're arguing about really fine points. And I know there was a back and forth going on about mimicry in one of the threads,
right.
and I could just imagine you sitting there the whole time going, I wish I could tell them I was working on this character who is so pertinent to the rule that we're discussing. But that's a really interesting point. So basically, for those people who are familiar with the rules, you would say that the character is using a variable power with one or two flaws. I'm trying to pinpoint that down. Did you give him a minus one for he can only mimic, and then another one for that he also mimics their weakness, or is it?
I gave him a limitation that he needed to only mimic power drain subjects.
Okay.
So this is kind of like it's not exactly a linked flaw, because there's obviously two different ranges. You know, link, the affliction, you know, is touch range, while,
right,
you know, the mimicry is personal. So you don't exactly link those two, but there is a limitation that you need to power drain. He needs to power drain his target first before he acquires his subject's traits.
Okay. Is there, just out of curiosity, is there a way you would build him differently if you were aiming at making him a player character, or is that power pretty much how you would design a player character?
I don't think a mimic is a great power, you know, and this is just speaking from, you know, past experience. I don't think it's a great power to have in, you know, as a player character in some ways. A lot of times, the most readily available subjects are your fellow players, your fellow player characters.
Yeah.
And
Jack got in on that side too. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. And, I guess, you know, you have a little bit of duplication of effort. And personally, I think with a variable, a lot of times you want to kind of have the power that you want on hand, you know, like a shapeshift. You can get, you know, a set of traits that you know will be useful to you. With
right. With
a mimic, sometimes you don't know exactly what will be useful to you. You could duplicate your teammate's power, but then you might be stepping on his toes a little bit. You know, hey, everything you can do, I can do, you know, better, maybe, you know, or almost as well. And I could do a bunch of other cool stuff too. So I think in a team environment, it's perhaps not quite as useful. As a villain, it's great, you know, and it makes for a lot of those neat storylines where, you know, let's say the Parasite, you know, drains Superman's powers, and now the Justice League has to find out a way to take down Parasite the way they would have taken down Superman, but they never did. You know, it's the same way with, you know, a similar type of character like Amazo, you know, who has all of the Justice League's powers. So when they need to take him down, they need to figure out, hey, you know, how do you defeat the Flash? You know, you cut off his legs. How do you, you know, how do you defeat Superman? You know, you expose him to kryptonite, or you know, and on down the line. So it's definitely a great villain power, but not quite as good of a PC power, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm having trouble thinking of, besides Black Alice from The Secret Six, I'm having trouble thinking of many mimics who were protagonists.
Interesting thing about her,
Rogue,
that she doesn't have to be in proximity to a subject, right? She can just mimic anybody she can think of.
I think as long as she's touched him before, and Rogue, Rogue needs physical contact still, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yes, and for most of her, run on, tenure onto X-Men, she really didn't use her mimic powers a whole lot. It was more kind of like a, plot device. She was afraid of using that power. And mainly she just used the power she stole from Miss Marvel.
Yeah, she was just kind of a flying brick.
Right.
Well, that's cool. That is interesting. Whenever I think of the JLA having to fight someone who imitates their powers, I always think of Prometheus. But I guess that's probably inaccurate because all he could really imitate was just Batman's fighting ability.
Ability of the 30 greatest martial artists in the world. And Batman cheated to beat him. But, it's kind of like, I think there was a recent fight between Prometheus and Lady Shiva where, Shiva wasn't concerned about, Prometheus's, database of her abilities, and certainly not concerned about the other 29 martial artists, whose abilities that he also gained. And he proceeded to wipe the floor with her. But, Prometheus is, I guess he's a mimic definitely in a way, but, not quite in the same, I wouldn't say quite in the same category for sure.
Oh, no, definitely not. Yeah. Is he still alive? Is he currently dead? Temporarily dead?
I think after Cry for Justice, I think Green Arrow shot him.
Yeah.
Which was, I guess it was a little silly, Green Arrow got the jump on him, in his lair and shot him. And, meanwhile, throughout the six issues, he was, basically showing what a badass he was, manipulating Supergirl and the rest of the Justice League. And, Ollie Queen, gets a jump on him and shoots him, and he's dead.
Yeah, that's kind of
a little anticlimactic. Yeah,
it's kind of an ignominious death. I mean, it's like, I've been messing around with Kryptonians, and now a guy with a bow and arrow kills me.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, going back to
it was Huntress who got him in the first time around too.
I thought it was Catwoman who got him.
Catwoman. Yeah. My bad. Catwoman who got him the first time around.
I can understand.
Question for you, Leon. Going back to your build philosophy. For those people who didn't catch up. Last time I did one of the podcast role-playing sessions, I used the Scarecrow as a villain, and Leon actually did the Scarecrow too. I think you told me that, or if it was either you or John mentioned that you were one of the contributors who liked to stick to a 15 PowerPoint per level scheme as much as possible. Can you talk a little bit about that?
No.
That
was not a that certainly wasn't an edict, and it wasn't something that I usually constrain myself to. If you've looked at my builds on the forums, if they happen to be close to 15 PowerPoints per level, I might tweak a point or two, to make them fit. And I think most of the Bat villains can easily be done at 15 points per level. A lot of them are kind of, very one-dimensional. They're not Superman, or Martian Manhunter, with every power in the book. They've got one thing that they do really, really well. And, a lot of times they probably come in, undercosted a little bit. But he just happened to come in at 15 points per power level, or very, very close to.
Okay. Well, in contrast, no, actually, I think Scarecrow came out to be exactly 150 points, if I remember. I have him around here somewhere. But
I think he does.
But it just kind of struck me. I think John said that that there it just seemed to sound like there were some people who wanted to veer closer to that scheme, and then some people who were just mostly concerned about getting the character as close to the comics as possible. And I was just wondering what your feelings are on that. I mean, are you more towards the second category or,
I think you know, for my build thread, they're all meant to be NPCs. They're meant to reflect the comics as closely as I could, I could make them. For heroes and villains, I think that John had said it would be nice if some came in, you know, perfectly ready to play, you know, and, my feeling was, you know, I'm not going to force it if they came out to be 25 points per power level, you know, but if they came pretty close, you know, it would be, you know, so Scarecrow would certainly be a viable PC character if, you know, that's redundant player character. And I think a lot of the bat villains, that I statted up, you know, came in very, very close to 15 power points per level. And so, you know, I, you know, moved a point here and there and, you know, shoehorned them in, but never by more than about, you know, 2 or 3 points to make them fit.
Okay. Cool. Would you say you did more villains or heroes, or was it split pretty evenly?
Oh, gosh. Probably more villains. Probably more villains. Yeah. That's,
yep. For fun with villains?
It's hard to say. You know, I think it's pretty equal opportunity for me. I think most of my assignments were just happened to be villains. For whatever reason, it's just coincidence. they're definitely a little different, I think. You know, when you're because building villains, you're really building a reflection of the hero in some way. So you kind of want to have the hero built first before you build the villain. So you kind of have an idea, okay, you know, this is a Superman villain. You know, how can I make him a viable threat to Superman? You know, maybe not all the time, you know, and he certainly doesn't have to win. He's going to lose most of the time, right, in the comics. But he has to be a reflection of who Superman is and reflect an aspect of why is this a Superman villain and not a Batman villain, for instance.
Gotcha. Right. Okay.
Does somebody have a pet duck? What was that?
That was my squeaky, crummy chair. Sorry.
That was your what chair?
Squeaky, crummy chair.
Oh, okay. All right. It's a
terrible chair.
I thought you were throwing sound effects into the podcast.
I think of another one.
I have some buttons where I can do that, but I will abstain, and I've abused that privilege in the past. Go ahead.
So you've told us he's power level 13, Parasite?
Yes. Yes, he's power level 13.
What point total does he come in at?
He comes in at 254. So let's see, divided by 13, carry them. So more than 15 points per level.
Yeah.
Look at Leon doing that math in his head. All right.
I needed a calculator.
He's definitely a scientist, ladies and gentlemen. You know, talking about villains gets me to thinking, wouldn't it be cool to see the Scarecrow in the Secret Six or the Suicide Squad? Just because, A, he's a trippy dude, and B, that's a guy you don't want as a teammate.
Is there enough of him that, you know, to redeem, though? Because I think, you know, all of the Suicide Squad and the Secret Six kind of have, you know, this feeling of, you know, maybe we don't want to be villains anymore. Maybe we want to, you know, have a life outside of this, but we're kind of forced to play this role, or we're forced, you know, in the case of the Suicide Squad, to, you know, pay for our crimes.
I was admitting you had a point.
Ah.
You are correct, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I have been known to be correct every now and then.
You know, but they had the Mad Hatter in the Secret Six, and he was just, effing crazy. So,
that's true.
But
he
was a short termer though. He was only there for, maybe 3 or 4 issues before Ragdoll pushed him off a cliff. So, might not be a long-term guy.
I think I missed that part of the run. I haven't actually been keeping up with too many comics recently, unfortunately. Definitely not quite as voracious a reader as I was even 2 years ago.
Did you just get some big event fatigue, or just get out of it for a while? Or
I think it definitely was event fatigue. You know, after, Identity Crisis, Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, you know, Secret Invasion, and Jeez. What else? You know, I just kind of, you know, gotten a little bit more selective about what I'm reading. You know, Return of Bruce Wayne, you know, was great. Batman and Robin, you know, I've got a, you know, I quite like Grant Morrison's work. And, you know, I've been reading that. You know, if you haven't read Return of Bruce Wayne number 6, it's great. You know, it's, you know, it's Grant Morrison definitely reading his comics is almost like, you know, getting an assignment for English class. There's so many metaphors and allusions that you kind of, you have to look up. You really have to look up. And sometimes you're like, what is he referencing? And then you actually have to go online and do some research and you go, oh, okay. Detective Comics 151. Oh, geez. You know, I don't think I was alive back then, but you know,
yeah, that's a
good call.
Morrison can either be the best guy or the worst guy to introduce a new reader to comics, because when he's being accessible, wow, is he fun. But yeah, when he's being dense and indulging in continuity for continuity's sake, yeah, he, you gotta have liner notes.
Definitely. I mean, the annotated, you know, Grant Morrison, I think, would sell quite well. And I think he should be forced to write annotations for everything he writes. Just to make it easier.
I remember back when I was big into comics back in the 70s and 80s, one of the things you always looked for is those little things in the corner of a panel where, you know, someone would mention something and then pop up comes a little editor, you know, remark that says, in Action Comics number 251, and then little signature Ed, you know, for the editor. So
yeah,
were annotated at one point.
I think with Grant, they kind of give up because he references a lot of continuity sometimes. Right. Actually, there's a documentary about him that just came out last month, Grant Morrison Talking with Gods.
Huh.
Basically, hey, Grant Morrison's a trippy guy. Here's a film about him kind of thing. But I read an interview with that guy in a book about comic book strip writers about 5-10 years ago. And I thought he was making it was right when in the middle of the Invisibles run, and he was talking about smoking hashish in Kathmandu and contacting fourth dimensional entities who clued him in on that, you know, the true nature of reality. And I'm like, wow, Grant Morrison really does come as advertised. Okay, that's
I met him at Comic-Con this year. He was you know, he had a panel, and gosh, he was a hoot. He was
really
a really engaging guy. I mean, I think he had a panel with a bunch of other Batman writers, and he definitely took the lead. He's I can see where he got. You know, he's I think, you know, all the other writers definitely have quite a bit of respect for him and for where he's taking the Batman franchise.
Do you guys remember that one big mega event that he did, like, back in the late 90s? Was it DC 1 million?
Yes.
That was not my favorite Grant Morrison thing, but one of my favorites, because, wow, that was cool. And I was hoping someone would follow up and do maybe some more with that far future, but you really haven't seen anything from that.
No, he's referenced that every now and then. I think there was a reference to the Superman 1 million in All-Star Superman, I believe. And there might have been a couple references here and there, but definitely, you know, no new series set in that universe or that time frame.
Yeah, that's one of the things about Grant Morrison. I mean, when he mentioned that with 52, he was trying to set up the idea of these 52 universes out there where they could do comics set in, you know, there's the Freedom Fighters multiverse where the Nazis won and the Freedom Fighters are in occupied America fighting back. And I would love to see a miniseries or ongoing series set in that reality.
I think everybody's waiting for Grant to launch his multiversity series before they start digging into all these other alternate universes for the most part.
I would think
don't think that's coming anytime soon.
I would think some of that stuff would be ideal for webcomics. You know, you could just, hey, for this, you know, 12 weeks, we're going to be looking at, you know, multiverse number 47. And for the next 12 weeks, you're going to be looking at multiverse number 5. Yeah, well,
that'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, yeah, I'd read it.
It seems like it's almost made for, you know, just with the sheer volume of material, like it'd be made for digital distribution. So you can have multiple writers.
Cut the cost for sure. You know, the cost of production. I don't know how it would affect the bottom line for DC to, you know, web publish them, but, you know, not having to distribute them, you know, physically, You know, yeah. I think it's definitely something they could take a chance on.
I'm under the impression that comics are kind of a lost leader, and what they're really making the money these days is merchandise and movie rights, but I could be mistaken about that.
That's what I've seen. Having spoken to a comic book writer lives locally here, he says that a lot of it, I mean, one, advertising space is pretty important, and that's one of the reasons why you'll have so many books from a single series. Like, you have a lot of X books. It's basically so they can walk in with, like, 8 monthly books in a single, you know, close run that has a lot of, you know, fan base, and talk to your advertisers and say, well, this ad will run in 6 books, you know, that have this many readers and so forth. So ad space is important, but also the simple fact that they do use them as a launching platform for merchandise, like you said, and movies, and as like a cheap way of trying to pitch a film without having to do like a proof of concept that actually costs production money, as far as like making a short movie or something.
Well, that sure does explain the recent explosion of Avengers titles.
Yeah. They are basically banking on that multiplicity.
Trying to rein the focus back into Mutants and Masterminds specifically. I think we had some forum questions that we wanted to take a look at.
I had one question that was actually directed specifically to Taliesin, and it's Cobalt from the forums. Now, he asked 3 questions, and I think 2 of them you cannot answer, but I'll ask them anyway. Number one, what's the most obscure character you did a write-up for or that you saw being done? He asked
Superman. Wait.
Now, who is the Superman you speak of?
In a vague way, and answer the second part. He basically is wanting to know how deep into the history the writers were able to go.
In terms of which characters were selected, can't really divulge too much about that. You know, as you say, contractually restrained here, but
yeah.
If it's too obscure, it probably didn't show up. But the easy way to look at this is there's 300 characters in each volume. So take the 600 most popular characters in the DC universe, and there's a pretty high probability that they're in there.
There you go.
You know, if it's yes, the most obscure DC character is probably not in there. But, you know, there is the Universe book that is coming out, and that might deal with some of the more, you know, the more obscure characters.
That reminds me of another question I kind of had. And I'm sorry to jump away from Cobalt here real quick, but a lot of the I'm under the impression that several of the entries are going to be just like a single character, but a lot of the character entries you know, for example, I don't know this one for a fact or anything because they haven't announced it, but, you know, I'm assuming that some form we'll see Blue Beetle in there. Actually, they have said that Blue Beetle is in the book. As a matter of fact, the Jaime one, if I'm saying his name right, I hope, the one who's kind of like a superhero version of a Guyver with the biomechanical suit.
Right.
Being a power level 10, like template type character for a player character. Like a really good one, Steve mentioned at some point. But I'm assuming that some of those entries will have multiple characters in them, multiple versions. Did you tackle any and you don't have to name names, but I mean, were there any where you were doing multiple characters per entry, or was it mostly one character?
A couple of them I did have to do multiple versions of the same character. You know, obviously, I think maybe John or Steve mentioned this in one of your podcasts, The Flash. You know, they said that, you know, Wally West has most of the same powers, I think, that Barry Allen does. So rather than, you know, give a whole separate entry for Wally West, they, you know, moved him as a sub-entry for Barry Allen. You know, he gets his own stat block and everything, but, you know, since the two characters were pretty similar, you know, they shunted them, you know, all under the same entry.
Okay.
You mean the Flash is going to be in there? Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's another one of those obscure characters Cobalt was talking about, I think. This Justice League, never heard of him.
His second question was, what was the most troublesome character for you to do? And I think we've eliminated that as maybe answerable because you've already told us about Parasite and we already know about Scarecrow. So unless one of those was a big problem for you, we need to move on to...
I think we probably should move on.
Okay. His third question I think we can actually tackle. He was recently rereading your DC builds from second edition. Now, for people listening, Taliesin put out a tremendous – he's one of the most prolific, you know, pre-statters out there. Just like is constantly building characters and posting them. In second edition –
back when I didn't have a life.
What's that?
Back when I didn't have a life.
You had like hundreds of DC builds, didn't you? I mean, literally.
Quite a few. I wasn't as prolific as some others who had thousands, perhaps. But okay. I've wasted quite a bit of my free time, I would say.
I don't think it was wasted, but it was certainly helpful to me and my group. But anyway, of the characters that you and the Hero Handbook covered, most of them look pretty similar. He's asking, did you have anything to do with the Hero's Handbook write-ups, or is it just coincidence or inspiration?
Yeah, I don't know how much inspiration, Steve Kenson took from my thread. I doubt that he hasn't been around very long, you know, only, 20 years in the industry, 20-something years. So I'm sure a newbie like him, you know, said, hey, you know what? I'm going to pop over to Taliesin's thread and get some ideas because I have no idea what I'm doing here. Or not. I think it was purely coincidental. By the time I did join the project in about March or April, I think Steve had already set it up, the characters, all of the characters in the Heroes Handbook. I think those were probably the first characters that were set it up so that they could be used as benchmarks for all the other freelancers. And I think some of the freelancers might have given a little bit of input. We've definitely discussed the characters a little bit. And there might have been, little changes here and there, but 99% of the characters that you see, in the Hero's Handbook were already done, basically, by the time I joined. And mm-hmm. I think any similarities, between his builds and mine, I never thought of the two of us as very similar in terms of building characters. I think, how many ways can you build Superman, or Batman? I think definitely there would be, a lot of similarities, and if anything, my second edition Superman and Batman builds might have drawn some inspiration from Steve's second edition builds of, Centurion and Raven, for instance.
Who were, definitely had elements of Superman and Batman in both of those characters.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's see here. Oh, that was you. I saw somebody new had posted in the thread, and I was checking to see what it was, and it's Mike.
Sorry. Hey,
that's all right. I was just checking to see if there were any questions more I could.
There was a question on the DCA forum about affliction duration. It's like it was from the Shadow. Let's see. How do recovery checks work when affliction is made longer duration? The text isn't very clear, but instant recovery makes it sound like no additional recovery checks get made until the power stops being maintained. So what would you say about that?
That's something that I think the rules as written leaves a little bit vague. It only mentions concentration, I think, as an extra. It doesn't mention any additional durations on affliction. And I mean, continuous is pretty expensive. It's a plus three on an instant power. And I think, you know, without an actual, you know, rule book ruling, I would be inclined to say that, you know what, if you're affected by a continuous affliction, you don't continue to make recovery checks. Now, I think it should come with the usual caveats that the GM should be pretty careful about allowing a continuous affliction. For one thing, I think it goes against kind of the spirit of at least DCA third edition in the sense that most of the conditions recover very quickly, and only the third degree conditions take a bit longer to recover. And even then, it's, you know, a minute of recovery time. All the other conditions, you know, you get a resistance check at the end of every turn. So I think it's, I guess, long answer short, I say it's a GM's call.
Okay. Well, hey, there was another one. Oh, this is pretty open-ended. I think you might have mentioned this when we were talking before the podcast. There were some questions about, when do you take advantages, or when do you take, you know, two ranks of, say, evasion instead of one rank, that kind of thing. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, strategies you used for that kind of thing when you were doing your builds?
Yeah, design.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, yeah, design. Basically from a design approach, you know, when do you choose advantages and why pick, you know, one like a bottom tier version of evasion instead of the, you know, both, you know, since it's only one more point, you know, I guess when do you choose one over the other?
Go with my gut. it's really tough, I guess, with character builds and character design. It's difficult to make a distinction between, you know, one rank versus two ranks sometimes, you know, or, you know, in the case of evasion, it's, I think, you know, which advantages you choose really depends on what you want your character to be good at, what you think, you know, mechanically, you know, would make this character effective. You know, certainly there's a part of character design where, you know, you're designing an NPC, you're trying to figure out, well, you know, Bruce Wayne obviously has benefit wealth, but how many ranks of that, you know? And a lot of that really comes down to opinion and benchmarks. That's why you have a set of benchmarks so you can kind of compare. Hey, you know, if this character has two ranks of evasion, then this other character should have two ranks of evasion as well. So you kind of have to set some ground rules for, you know, if you're going to give this character, you know, this power at this rank or this advantage at this rank, then you should be consistent. But in the sense of, you know, I mean, you could say this of, you know, any attribute, you know, should Superman have a 19 strength or a 20 strength? I mean, that's, you know, that's just one rank difference. And you can make good arguments either way. Should Captain Marvel have the same strength as Superman, or should his strength be one rank lower? And, you know, I kind of think it's more a reflection of the designer, you know, and what he sees in the comics, how he interprets the comics. You know, I think in the Hero's Handbook, both Captain Marvel and Superman have a 19 strength. And, you know, the comics certainly support this, that Captain Marvel, you know, has been more or less the equal of Superman. I think from, you know, at least from Steve's reading, from my reading, I kind of have always put Captain Marvel, you know, maybe one point lower, you know, one rank lower, and it doesn't really make a whole lot of difference in terms of gameplay. You know, a plus one is, you know, 5%, you know, difference really in terms of success rate. You know, and to go back to evasion, I think it's really a matter of, you know, there's no right or wrong answer for that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Cool.
Well, just for the record, Batman has benefit 5 for being a billionaire. And he has one rank.
Totally off. He should have benefit 7. I mean, no. I mean, yeah, right? It's really, really hard to say, geez, you know, how much money does Batman have? You know, I mean, even take the real world, right? You ask, you know, Bill Gates, how much money do you have? You know, are you, you know, are you a rank 6 or a rank 7 wealth? Or, right? Yeah, I bet he doesn't even know. You know, so how do we know? He has enough.
You want to get that granular, you can go play hero. I understand. And Batman has one rank of evasion, which makes me think I need someone to be awfully slick to get anything more than one rank of evasion if Batman only has one.
Right.
Because Batman...
You could say, hey, maybe Dick Grayson has 2 ranks because Dick has always been seen as, you know, a better acrobat, you know, and his style is more, you know, avoiding a punch, avoiding an effect rather than, you know, taking it.
Mm-hmm.
Even more so than Batman.
Yeah, I would accept that argument as a GM. But in 3 ranks of evasion, maybe Lady Shiva. Maybe.
There's no third rank.
Then that's not possible at all. I was testing you and you passed, James. Very good.
But Chuck Norris would have 3 ranks of evasion.
Uh-oh.
Chuck Norris would. Chuck Norris's tears could cure cancer if only he would cry. All right. Well, hey, I think we've been talking for a little over an hour. Heading towards that time frame where I'd like to wrap up. Anything else you guys want to touch on before we call it a podcast?
Sure. I've working on, I guess, you know, James had asked earlier whether – you know, there was anything else I was working on and coming down the line. And I think this was maybe mentioned a little bit on the forums. There is a GM kit coming out for Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition. And as you know, Steve and John have been working on, you know, the non-DCA 3rd Edition source books as well. So I've had a chance to work on... a random character generator for that source book. I think
John. Sweet. You're working on that? Excellent.
Yes, I'm working with John on that. You know, he kind of I think he set up a poll on the forums
yeah.
You know, a couple months back inquiring whether right. And you know, it's apparently enough people wanted one and you know, it's definitely in the works and it's quite a bit of fun. It's a lot different in some ways from building an NPC. You're kind of building, I dozens so and dozens of characters.
I so want to be a playtester for that. John, if you're listening, give me an email.
And that does work sometimes. I would know. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. There's, some tip of the cap to some various existing characters, you know, when you're trying to pull together, you know, a generator like that. And it's always fun to see what kind of Frankenstein's monster of a superhero you can roll up.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I just hope we're going to see a Java-based version of that or something, you know, like that. But, yeah, I would be really anxious to see that when you guys get finished.
Yeah, so would I.
All right. You don't have any kind of, I guess it would be the acme of foolishness to ask if you had any kind of release date or time frame on that.
No idea. I don't think we even have a hard release date for Heroes and Villains 1 yet. And that's book number 2 coming out. So, yeah, no, nothing I'd, I don't think John or Steve, I think John and Steve gave a quick update on the front page about Heroes and Villains 1. You know, just a quick status update that, you know, there have been a couple little delays, but, you know, we're working on it.
Okay, that's cool.
And I think I'm trying to remember. Now, you said that you're working on the random generator. Do we have a name for – I mean, is it a standalone product or is that going to be in a book?
Or it's going to be in a book. It's going to be in a GM type book.
Okay, so kind of like the Masterminds edition.
Something like that. I don't know exactly what it's called. And I think John might have referenced it. on the forums. But if not, yeah, it's kind of a GM's kit or a GM's type handbook. And that's, I think, where it's going to be slated to go.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that's a news bomb right there. That's a scoop.
That's a big deal. Oh, sweet.
Breaking news. Yeah.
That's exclusive for the Vigilance Press podcast, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first.
I hope I don't get in trouble for that.
Well,
it's been cleared. It's been cleared.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. I wanted to thank James for being with us once again.
Always a pleasure.
And Mr. Chang, thank you very much for joining us. Really a pleasure to talk to you.
No problem. It was great.
And until next time, everyone stay vigilant.
Goodbye.